Marshall Hammett, America's leading detective fiction writer and creator of Sam Spade, the hard-boiled private eye, and William Spear, radio's outstanding producer-director of mystery and crime drama, join their talents to make your hair stand on end with the adventures of Sam Spade.
You hired me yesterday morning, but the real start of it was back in 45. Flashback.
Did you ever wonder what a bull must feel like when they let him into the ring? The bars go up, he's free, he rushes out figuring, "I've gotten away." And there in front of him are 50 guys with pitchforks and a man with an oversized knitting needle. He looks around and there's no way out. Last week I found out what that feeling is like.
Nero Wolf's office, Archie Goodwin speaking. Mr. Wolf? No, he isn't. Huh? Oh, well, for you, maybe he is.
I'm not here.
Oh, yes, yeah, he's always here.
I've gone out.
No, no, he seldom ever goes out.
I won't start on anything tonight.
Well, sure, he'd love to start on a case tonight.
Phooey.
The Adventures of the Saint, starring Vincent Price.
Hello there, this is Diamond. You know, this business I'm in can get pretty silly sometimes. I can go along for a whole month and get by on nothing but meals at the automat and a dozen laughs a day. The funny ones usually pay just as well as the tough ones, but eventually somebody starts something that's about as funny as an open grave.
And now here is your guide.
There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you this fall.
OTRO.
And now, here is OTRO.
Hey, everyone, this is OTR Rob welcoming you to another edition of Richard Diamond, Private Detective, and all of the other shows, which include Nero Wolf, Rocky Fortune, The Saint, and all the other shows that are tagged along with this show. You know them, you love them, you like them, so I'm presenting them to you. Now, this Richard Diamond is from October 8th, 1949. The episode is entitled The Gibson Murder Case, and Georgia Ellis from Gunsmoke fame is featured in the cast of Richard Diamond, Private Detective. I listened to a bunch of Richard Diamond, Private Detectives going into the future. I listened to about 40 episodes or so, and these are all from the NBC run in perfect sound quality. And when I first started getting involved with Richard Diamond, Private Detective, about 3 years back, there weren't that many episodes, and not in consecutive order. There was kind of bits and pieces. But I was pleasantly surprised to learn that many of the Richard Diamond, Private Detective shows are now there that weren't there before, that I had not heard before. So you're in for some real fun times listening to Richard Diamond, Private Detective. And I like the shows. I don't know if you all do or not, but I do. There's a lot of humor involved with it, and I think that's good for a private detective, because if he can't stand on his humor, what else can he stand on besides his 38? Anyway, enjoy this Richard Diamond and all the other shows, and I'll see you all back here next week, God willing, and the creeks don't rise.
The Ethel Merman Show, previously scheduled for this time, will be heard at a new time and date to be announced shortly. Transcribed is Dick Powell as Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Hello there, this is Diamond. Hey, I got a beef. I went shopping for my girl Helen Asher the other day. You know, stuff for dinner. This town's gotten hotter than a blast furnace in Death Valley, so you gotta pick out things that make for a cool meal. Like salads, cold cuts, beer. Real picnic style. Well, I figured I could whip up a fancy tossed salad or something. Until I got around to the tomato counter. Have you glommed onto the price of tomatoes lately? Now, what's with that? So the cost of living is inflated. So a T-bone makes like it just arrived direct from the Sultan's classiest cow. Okay, a T-bone, I can understand. But what's with a tomato? When it costs so much, it should be hanging from a charm bracelet instead of lying in a salad bowl. Who needs it? So I bowed from the waist and figured you could still do a lot of things with a plain head of lettuce. Oh, I got another beef, too. Why can't people start their killings in December when it's cool? Now, about a week ago, I got mixed up in a case, and before it was over, I took so many salt tablets, I am now the best seasoned private detective in New York. It started last Tuesday morning about 11 o'clock in an apartment on the Upper East Side. Ginny?
Yeah, genius.
No cracks.
No cracks. We're both waiting for old Gibson to turn us into the cops, and you say no cracks. This whole rotten mess is your fault.
Well, how did I know the old goat wouldn't fall for it?
Well, he didn't, so we better start packing.
What for?
Because I don't want to play hostess to a lot of little men in blue. I'm allergic to handcuffs.
Relax, will you? They won't find us.
They can trace me from the other apartment.
How? Gibson don't know your real name. Did you leave anything in the other place that will lead him here?
No. Cleaned out everything except the clothes. I didn't have time to move them.
I noticed you got away with the mink.
What'd you want me to do, leave it behind?
No, we can hock it.
Hock it?
Yeah. You want to blow town? Takes cash. Cash I ain't got.
You're telling me.
Look, baby, if Gibson does go to the police, I'll have to hock the court so we can blow this joint, see?
All right. You go get rid of it, and I'll start throwing some things into the suitcase.
Who's that?
How would I know? Maybe it's a landlady.
Oh, I forgot. They're painting this floor today.
Yeah, I saw the painters in 206. They'll probably start on this room in a couple of hours.
Okay. Duck that court. I don't want the landlady to spot it.
Yeah,
what? Gibson.
So you really are married, huh?
Who is it, Harv?
Hello, Virginia.
Mr. Gibson.
Yes, I waited around in front of the other apartment and followed you here. I wanted to be sure to send the police to the right place.
Look, Mr. Gibson, look.
You look, whatever your real name is. I don't like being blackmailed or threatened.
But please...
No, Virginia, my mind's made up. In a way, I'm sorry for you, but you didn't think about me. I'm past 60, and I'm tired of being made a fool.
Look, why don't you give her a break, Mr. Gibson? No, I'm not asking for
That's
me.
That's very noble of you. You should have thought about that a few hours ago when you accused me of making love to your wife. You're not really married.
Well,
there is no need of displaying your indignation. There'll be plenty of time for that when the police arrive.
Harv?
Yeah. Come in here.
Hey, how dare you? Take your hands off me.
Look, you ain't calling nobody. You gonna listen to me?
You take your hands off me.
What are you gonna do, Harv?
I'm gonna change his old goat's mind about calling the cops.
You can't threaten me.
No.
Oh, you struck me.
How'd you guess?
Harv, take it easy. He's an old man.
Your concern is misplaced, my dear. I can take care of myself.
Why, you... Give me that cane.
I'll be glad to give it to you across your shoulders.
Give me that.
Harv, be careful.
Hit me with a cane, will you?
No, young...
I'll set you up for good.
Harvey. Harvey. Idiot.
Huh?
You big, stupid idiot. Look what you've done.
All right, so what? No better next time. Throw some water on him. Well, did you hear me? Throw some water on him. What's wrong? Come on, Gibson. Come on. Holy cow.
Is he?
Yeah. Oh, shut up.
You
gotta get him out of here.
Why'd you have to hit him with a cane? Now you're in trouble.
I'm in trouble. We're in trouble, baby. We. Stop that crying all over the place. Help me get him out of here.
How are we gonna do it? It's broad daylight.
Yeah. Can't get him out of the building like this. We'll have to wait till the night.
We can't leave him in here.
Why not?
The painters.
What do you mean? What?
They'll be here in a little while.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Now what, genius?
Shut up, will you? Gotta think.
Hello?
Diamond Detective Agency murders financed while you wait?
Oh, you idiot.
Oh, is this Toodles Asher, the belle of Park Avenue?
This is Helen Asher, the girl that goes steady with the Diamond Detective Agency.
Sounds like a fine organization. Are they reliable?
Very seldom.
Oh.
I'll tell you better as soon as I find out what I'm going to do tonight.
You're going to give your butler the evening off, and the Diamond Detective Agency is going to march through your front door single file and show you a shortcut to spend the bottle.
What time does all this begin?
How long will it take you to pucker?
About 2 seconds.
Well, I won't get there until 8. Don't hold it or you'll end up looking like a Ubangi.
You're terrible.
Yeah, but I'm pretty.
So is a baboon.
Oh, what you saying?
You won't be late, will you, Rick?
I don't know, after that last crack, I think I'd better start going steady with King Kong.
Rick.
No, I'm mad.
Ricky, I love you.
Only because I can hang by my tail and my fangs have that toothpaste smile.
I think you're the most wonderful man in the world.
Well?
I think you're the handsomest, the strongest, the smartest.
Well, all right. Now tell me something I don't already know.
Rick.
Bye, baby. See you at 8.
Bye.
A, I'm adorable. B, I'm so beautiful. C, I'm... Now, look, honey, I can't make it till 8 o'clock. I got a fan dancer who's a client. She wants to go out and trap an ostrich this afternoon.
Is this the Diamond Detective Agency?
Huh? Oh, yeah.
Is this Mr. Diamond?
Yeah, what's the matter? You sound like you're standing on a body.
Oh, Mr. Diamond, please, you've got to help me. I just don't know what to do.
Now, take it easy. Who is this? What's wrong?
I thought it moved.
What moved?
The man sitting in my chair.
Well, that happens now and then. Why shouldn't he?
Oh, well, because he's dead.
What?
Yes. I came home this afternoon from girls' camp, and when I unlocked my door and went in, I found this, corpse sitting on my Heppelwhite.
On your what?
Heppelwhite. I don't know how he could have gotten there.
Heppelwhite?
No, the dead man.
What about Heppelwhite?
Who?
The guy this corpse was sitting on.
Oh, no, 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 no. That's a chair. Heppelwhite's an old antique chair.
Oh.
Oh, now I'm so confused.
Well, move over, honey. Now take it easy and give me one thing at a time. Who's the dead guy?
Well, I don't know. I never saw him before in my life.
Okay. Now, why haven't you called the police?
Well, I thought about that, but I'm a school teacher, Mr. Diamond, and I was afraid of the scandal. I read a lot of detective stories, and the first thing that came to my mind was calling a private eye.
Private eye.
Mm-hmm. You had the biggest ad in the phone book, so naturally...
Naturally. Well, give me your name and address, and I'll be right over.
Oh, Esther Blodgett, 419 East 79th Street, apartment 108.
Okay, Esther. Now, don't let anyone in and don't touch anything.
Oh, I know that, silly. After the initial shock wore off, I found myself in complete control.
What's the matter?
I'm so nervous. I just lit a cigarette. It tasted so good, I offered one to the dead man.
Well, if he takes it, remember how you did it. I'll be right over. Heppelwhite. Oh, is Walt going to have fun with this?
Homicide, Sergeant Otis.
Hello, Otis. Let me talk to the lieutenant.
Diamond?
No, this is Black Beauty. I just did a mile in 112, and I want to report that I've been doped.
Very funny.
I thought so. I didn't win the race, but I was the happiest horse on the track. Now, put the lieutenant on the phone.
Lieutenant Levinson.
Diamond, Walt.
I don't want any. You take your killings to another precinct.
Oh, now, don't be a sorehead. Giving you business is just my way of showing my friendship.
Can't we just be buddies at a distance? I'm getting tired of chasing corpses.
Well, grit your teeth and get over to 419 East 79th Street, apartment 108.
Homicide?
Yeah. A dame named Esther Blodgett reported it. She lives there.
Who's dead?
Well, I don't know. Oh, yeah. A guy named Heppelwhite.
Heppelwhite?
You ask Esther about it. She'll put you straight.
Are you coming over?
Yeah. Bye. As I went out of my office, I thought about Esther Blodgett and wondered how mad she would be when the police turned up. I had to call them whether she wanted a scandal or not, because homicide comes first in my book. I'm an ex-cop, and I still follow the rules. It's not a conscience. I just like staying in business. So when someone turns up with a killing, I always let Lieutenant Walt Levinson know about it. I grabbed a cab, and 20 minutes later, I was standing in Esther's apartment along with Walt, the dead man, and Heppelwhite.
Oh, you're a swell fella, you are.
What's the matter, Walt?
I've been going through that Heppelwhite routine for the last 10 minutes. I just found out it was a chair, that one right over there, the one that stiffs in.
Mr. Diamond, why did you call the police?
I thought you'd ask that.
Because that man's been murdered, Miss Blodgett. That's what good citizens do when they find a dead man in the apartment.
But the scandal? I'm a school teacher. What will my students' mommies and daddies think?
Honey, just confuse them with that Heppelwhite routine. What did you find out, Walt?
Not much. The coroner will be here in a few minutes.
Looks like someone gave him a pretty good beating. What's that all over his clothes?
Isn't that blood, Mr. Diamond?
Yeah, he's been bleeding all right. I mean that brown stuff, Walt. Looks like lint or something.
I noticed that, too. I don't know what it is. We'll have the lab analyze it.
Tell me, Esther, you said when you came in you unlocked the door.
Yes, that's right.
Are you sure it was locked?
Why, yes, it has a catch lock. Besides, you have to turn the key and then use the other hand to turn the knob.
Did you touch anything? Open any windows?
I touched nothing.
Oh. Well, there's a good one, Walt.
Yeah. A corpse sitting in a room with the door and all the windows locked. Do you always lock the windows when you go out, Miss Blodgett?
Well, I've been away for several weeks at a girls' camp.
Aren't you a little old for that sort of thing?
Oh, I've been counseling one of the teachers who goes along to take care of the young girls.
What do you think, Rick?
Well, he wasn't killed in this apartment.
No, no signs of a struggle.
There's only blood around the chair and on the body. He must have been carried in.
There would be blood trails on the floor.
Not if he was carried in something. You say you never saw this man before, Esther.
Never in my life.
Any identification in his wallet?
Yeah, name's Gibson. Leland Gibson. No money taken either, so that eliminates the robbery angle.
Any address?
Yeah, he's got an old driver's license. 12 East 64th Street. Pretty classy district.
Judging by his clothes, he was well fixed. Tailored. Good store.
As soon as the coroner arrives, I'm going to check this apartment building. Maybe somebody heard something or saw something.
Well, let me check the 64th Street address for you.
This is a police job. Why do you want to check it?
Oh, because poor Miss Blodgett looks so unhappy.
I am, Mr. Diamond. I am very unhappy.
See, Walt?
So she's unhappy. If you want to check the place on your own, go ahead. But I'm sending some men over anyway.
Mr. Diamond, I like you.
Well, thank you, Esther.
No.
I want to hire you to catch the killer and free me from this awful policeman.
Awful policeman? Do you know how I got this way, Miss Blodgett?
Oh, I'm sure it wasn't easy.
Good for you, Esther.
I got this way because of this private detective.
Just call me Blue Eye.
Ever since he stopped working with me and left the force, I've gotten mixed up in more screwy cases than an alcoholic in a whiskey truck. There isn't one week that he doesn't turn up with one or two killings.
My, he gets excited, doesn't he, Mr. Diamond?
And in his spare time, he intimidates my sergeant.
Just call me Rick, dear.
I've taken enough bicarbonate in the last year to stop Vesuvius erupting. And if he doesn't give me a little peace and quiet, I'm going to end up solving a killing of my own.
Rick, my, that's a nice name.
How did you ever get to be a school teacher? You don't look the type.
Are you listening to me?
What makes me so different?
I've seen signs on highways that say it better than I can.
What are you two babbling about?
You mean the ones that say, danger, stop, look, and listen?
Well, that fits, but I was thinking about curves and soft shoulders.
Oh, no. Now you listen to me, Diamond. This is serious business. A man's been killed in soft shoulders. Miss Blodgett's apartment. If you want to take her on as a client, go ahead. But any questions from here on in will have to be gotten down at police headquarters.
You are taking me in, Captain?
Lieutenant. Yes, you'll have to come down for questioning.
Rick?
You go along with the big bad policeman, dear. I'll have you out in no time.
Well, all right, if you say so, but this has never happened to me before.
Oh, no. Oh, that's unfair. Walt, stop blubbering. Yes, Walt. What is it? Oh, you get out of here.
Oh.
Otis, where the devil is Otis?
I left Walt jumping up and down in front of Esther and the corpse and headed for 12 East 64th Street. It was an old brownstone in one of the wealthier districts. And when I rang the doorbell, I got another surprise.
Yes?
Yes. Don't tell me you're a school teacher.
I beg your pardon.
Forget it. It's the landmarks that threw me.
What do you want?
Do you know a Mr. Leland Gibson?
Yes, he's my father. Now, just who are you?
Name's Diamond. I'm afraid I've got some bad news for you, Miss Gibson.
It's Father. Something's happened to Father.
May I come in?
Oh, I'm terribly sorry, yes. Now, please, what is it? What's happened to Dad?
Well, he's dead.
Oh, no. No.
Look, I know this is tough, but you've got to help me. The police will be here in a minute.
The police?
Yes, your father was murdered.
Oh, I knew something like this would happen.
You did? Well, tell me about it.
Well, I don't mean that I expected Dad to be...
Okay, now, just take your time. Cry it out.
I'm sorry. Have you a handkerchief?
Sure, here.
Thank you.
Now, think you can talk about it?
Dad left the house about 3 weeks ago and moved into a hotel.
Did you have a fight or something?
Oh, no. Everything was fine, but...
No, hang on.
Things couldn't have been better, and He was in wonderful spirits when he left.
No arguments, no hard feelings? He didn't leave mad?
Oh, no, no, nothing like that.
Then, have you got any idea why he suddenly packed and moved into a hotel?
Well, I'm not sure, but I think it was a woman.
A woman?
Yes, he told me one day that he'd met someone he liked very much. The day after that, he moved to the hotel, but I never saw her, and he never said anything more about her.
Weren't you a little worried?
Naturally. Father isn't a young man anymore. I mean, wasn't.
Just one more question. What hotel did he move to?
It was the Adams on Madison Avenue. He used to go there 3 nights a week for dinner and a game of bridge before he decided to move in.
Well, thank you. Are you all alone?
Yes.
Got any friends you can call?
A few, I guess.
Well, call them. It's better not to be alone. And bawl your head off. It'll do you some good.
I'll send you your handkerchief, Mr.
Diamond. Richard Diamond. It's in the book. For some reason, I've got a talent for leaving people emotionally disturbed. Walt hops around like a rabbit in a cabbage patch, and Otis always tears his hair out by the hands full. Miss Gibson was less active about it. She just tried to smile and shed enough grief to fill a tub. I grabbed another cab and headed for the Adams Hotel.
Yes, sir. Do you wish to register?
No, but I want to find out about someone who did 3 weeks ago.
Oh?
Yeah, oh. Mr. Leland Gibson.
Why, yes, he's staying at the hotel.
From now on, that's past tense.
I don't understand. He hasn't notified us that he's leaving.
Well, that might be a little difficult. If you'll run down to the morgue, I think you'll find out you're stuck with an empty room.
The morgue?
Yeah. Mr. Gibson has taken over one of the slabs, rent-free.
Oh, my goodness. What happened?
He's kind of dead. When did you last see him?
Early this morning. He left the hotel around 10.
Know where he was going?
Why, no.
Do you remember him having any visitors in the last 3 weeks? A girl, I mean.
No. Are you looking for a girl?
Yeah. Mr. Gibson's daughter seems to think he was running around with a woman since he moved into the hotel.
Oh.
You say that like you knew what I was talking about.
It was common gossip around the hotel.
What was?
Well, Mr. Gibson has been coming to the hotel for many years. He used to eat dinner here 3 nights a week and then play bridge with some of the hotel regulars. Now, about a month ago, we took on a new waitress.
Uh-huh.
Now, it was very obvious that Mr. Gibson was quite taken by her. So much so that he moved into the hotel and ate at her table every night.
Oh, what was her name?
Virginia Pelgrim. Quite good-looking. About 5'3", dark brunette, very well,
I'd like to see her.
That's impossible. She left the hotel about a week after Mr. Gibson arrived.
Oh, swell. Wasn't Mr. Gibson unhappy?
Oh, no. He was rather happy, in fact. I believe he wanted her to move so he could see her more often.
Now, what makes you say that?
Some of the things she said in the kitchen to the other girls.
Do you know where she might have moved?
No. But you might check with the flower shop. Mr. Gibson used to send flowers every day.
Well, thank you. Well, I wasn't sure just where I was going, but Virginia Pelgrim was my best lead, and maybe she could tie the Gibson murder up with a silk ribbon. I talked to the flower clerk, and he gave me the address that the flowers had been sent to every day. It was a nice apartment in the village, and the landlady stuck her nose out like she was trying to smell me instead of see who was calling.
Yes?
I hope that door doesn't slam shut sometime. You'll have a bloody nose for weeks.
What do you want?
Roll out an eye with that nose, and I'll show you my badge.
Aren't you cops ever polite to anyone?
Well, there's a face that goes with it. I'm looking for a girl, about 5'3", dark brunette.
No, in the wrong place.
Her name's Pelgrim.
Oh, her. She lives upstairs.
She does, huh? Is she in now?
No. Went out this morning. Hasn't come back.
And she probably won't. She have many visitors?
Only a couple. Men.
That figures. Ever see an elderly man, gray hair, about 60?
Sure, every day.
Know his name?
No.
You said she had a couple of visitors. Who else?
Another man. Younger. Kind of greasy. Only came around a few times. Old man was there this morning, had an argument.
Could you hear what they said?
I don't snoop.
Anyone else?
No.
Who paid her rent?
She did. Cash.
Mind if I take a look at her apartment?
Got a search warrant?
No.
Then you can't.
Okay, thanks. You've been charming. I left the old bat and headed back to the school teacher's apartment. If I was right, I'd seen setups like this before. But there was still the problem of finding out how Gibson was killed and how he got into a locked room. When I pulled up, I saw the wagon, complete with corpse and coroner, pulling away for the morgue. And when I went in and knocked on the door, I was certain that they'd forgotten one of the bodies.
Oh, it's you, Shamus.
Why, Otis. They're leaving without you.
Who is?
The hearse. Shouldn't you be lying down or something?
Now you stop that, Rick, and get in here.
Hello, Walt. What's new?
Well, Rick.
Well, Esther. Has Otis been using his rubber hose on you?
Oh, no, no, but I was getting lonesome. I'm glad you got back so soon.
You are.
As soon as you two stop rolling your eyes, maybe you can tell me what you found out, Mr. Diamond.
Yeah. Walt, send Otis down to the station for a search warrant. Then tell him to get over to 9 West 12th Street and see what he can find in the Miss Virginia Pelgrim's apartment.
Who's Virginia Pelgrim?
The only person who was mixed up with a murdered man. There was another man who used to see her, but I can't find out who he was.
All right. Otis, go get the warrant.
Yeah, Lieutenant. Thanks, Diamond.
A pleasure, Sergeant. What did you find out, Walt?
There were 11 people in the building at the time of the killing. None of them ever saw the guy before. Here's a list of the names. 3 people on this floor, 5 on the second, and 3 more on the third.
Have you talked to the landlady?
Certainly. She doesn't know any more about it than the rest.
What about that funny brown lint on the dead man's clothes?
We're checking on that right now. The lab said they'd call me.
Did the landlady say she had a key to this apartment?
Sure, sure, but she hasn't used it but once since Miss Blodgett was away at girls' camp.
When did she use it?
3 days ago, when she had let the painters in. And she says that the windows and door were definitely locked, because after she aired the paint smell out, she locked them herself.
Painter, huh?
Yes, and I've been looking. You know, I think they did a terrible job. Why, the kitchen
Esther.
Alone... Yes, Rick?
Later, dear.
Yes, Rick.
Walt, did they paint the whole building?
They finished the second floor today. Oh, I'll get it, Miss Blodgett. Probably the lab.
Rick, yeah? Do you know who did it?
Yeah. I got a hunch.
Oh.
I see.
You're wonderful.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Lab, Walt?
Yeah. That lint you spotted in the dead man's clothes is from the mat that they put under rugs.
Mm-hmm. Walt, you were on all the floors. Did one of the apartments have a rug missing?
They're all missing from the second floor. The tenants took them down to the basement when the painters moved in.
Any off this floor or the third?
No, just the second.
Well, your killers are on the second floor, Walt.
How do you figure?
Well, let's look at what we've got. Dead body in a locked room. Blood on body and floor around body, but nowhere else in the room. Carried in a rug, bullseye.
Oh, this is so exciting.
Esther.
Sorry.
Yeah, but how does a dame called Pelgrim figure into it? There's no Pelgrim listed in this building.
Well, there shouldn't be if I'm right. The dead man met Virginia Pelgrim while she was working as a waitress in his hotel. She gave him a pitch and he fell. He put her up in an apartment so he could see her more often.
So what?
I think she was working with another man. A man who was seen around her apartment by the landlady.
Then how did the body get over here?
The guy the dame was working with probably lives here.
What about the motive?
Well, my guess is that Gibson was being blackmailed, and he followed the girl here. He was probably going to yell cops, so they killed him.
Okay, now what about the locked room? Explain that.
I let the landlady of this building explain it, Walt. Go ask her one question. Who had this apartment before Miss Blodgett?
Esther.
Oh, I'm sorry, Esther.
Well, I can tell you that. A Mr. and Mrs. Austin, they moved to a smaller apartment and let me have this one. It's more rent and they couldn't afford it, I expect. This is a better apartment, though. It has very...
Esther, what apartment did they take?
Oh, it's on the next floor, apartment 209.
According to this list of people who were on the second floor at the time of the killing, the Austins are the only couple. What did Mrs. Austin look like, Walt?
Oh, about 5'3", dark brunette, very, very well...
Oh, say no more. Come on, Walt.
May I come?
No, Esther. You stay here. I'll be back later and discuss the better features of your nice little apartment.
Yeah?
I want to talk to you again, Mr. Austin.
Why? Told you everything I know.
Where's your wife?
In the back.
We're coming in.
Okay, you don't have to shove.
Who is it, Har?
Them cops again.
Well, hello, Virginia.
Do I know you?
Where's your rug, Mr. Austin?
What? It's down the basement.
Miss Pelgrim, how long have you been married to this man?
About 3... Hey, how'd you know
me? Shut up.
Know your name? You might as well tell the lieutenant everything. Why did you lie about knowing Mr. Gibson?
I didn't. I never saw him before in my life.
I didn't tell you the dead man's name was Gibson. How'd you know that?
Don't answer that.
Oh, shut up. You and your husband killed Mr. Gibson and carted him downstairs in a rug.
Why'd we do that?
Because the painters were on their way to paint your apartment. You had to get him out without being seen. You dumped him in Miss Blodgett's apartment because you knew she was out of town. And you used to live there, so you still had a key.
Harvey.
Yeah, shut up.
We've got enough to hold both of you on. The rug will have bloodstains on it.
Oh.
Get out of my way. Get out, Walt.
Why, Walt, you're so rough.
Yeah.
I didn't kill him. Harvey did. I didn't kill him.
Okay, okay. You can tell me all about it down at the station. Hey, where are you going?
Well, it's 6:30. I got a date.
What about Miss Blodgett? She's going to get lonesome again.
Ah, she was born that way. I've got to see a girl who's going to hold a pretty interesting class of her own. Bye.
Hi.
Hi. Well, don't you look comfortable? Where's Francis?
I gave him the night off, like you suggested.
Ah, you're cute.
I've got a cool dinner in the library.
School day, school day.
You sound happy.
Well, I was just thinking about a school teacher I knew once. That looks mighty toothy.
Sing for your supper.
What?
Got a new tune on the piano.
Oh, honey, I'm hungry.
You sing first, and then you can eat.
Oh. Oh, all right. What is it?
Right here. So in love.
Oh, okay. Strange, dear, but true, dear. When I'm close to you, dear, the stars fill the sky. So in love with you am I.
Oh, keep going, I'll get it.
Even without you, my arms fall about you. You know, darling, why so in love with you am I.
Some girl asking for you.
Oh, some girl. Wow.
I told her there was no one here but the piano tuner.
Oh? She leave her name?
Uh-huh. Heppelwhite.
Heppelwhite?
Yes.
Hmm.
Who's she?
Come here, baby.
No. I want to know who she is.
I said come here.
No, I...
Oh.
Ricky.
Mm-hmm.
Who's Heppelwhite?
Oh, just a chair, baby. A cute blonde chair.
You have just heard Richard Diamond, Private Detective, starring Dick Powell, transcribed. Helen was played by Virginia Gregg, Lieutenant Levinson by Ed Begley. Also in our cast were Wilms Herbert, Georgia Ellis, Tony Barrett, Joan Banks, and Norman Field. Music was under the direction of Frank Worth. Richard Diamond is written by Blake Edwards. Now, this is Eddie King reminding you that Dick Powell soon will be seen in the screen version of the bestseller novel, Mrs. Mike, and inviting you to be with us again at the same time next week when we will again bring you Dick Powell as Richard Diamond, Private Detective. Saturday night brings some of the week's best radio entertainment when you tune for the stars on NBC. Stay tuned every Saturday for a great lineup of programs, including Hollywood Star Theater, Ralph Edwards' Truth or Consequences, Your Hit Parade, A Day in the Life of Dennis Day, The Judy Canova Show, and Grand Ole Opry. All the best on NBC. Frank Sinatra, transcribed as Rocky Fortune. NBC presents Frank Sinatra, starring as that footloose and fancy-free young gentleman, Rocky Fortune.
Hi, this is Rocky Fortune. You know, for a guy who went to school under the L tracks and learned his alphabet off of neighborhood store windows, I'm at the head of a mighty fancy class these days. I signed a new lease on life when I stopped Perry Shane, a Park Avenue legal eagle, from bending down in front of a hot slug poured his way by an ex-con. Perry, being the rich, understanding type, showed his thanks by offering me a process-serving job in his 14-carat law factory. In the workings of my new job, I do not have the ticking of a time clock to affect my sunny disposition. However, on this particular day, my sunny disposition went south. In fact, everything was pouring. The skies and Mr. Shane, who was now pouring himself a slug of something that couldn't possibly be tea.
Come in, Rocky. Sit down.
What's with the early cocktail session? The rain got you down?
No. Matter of fact, I like the rain.
Mr. Shane, I will endanger the morale of your office by being the first employee to accept libation during office hours.
Oh, I'm sorry, Rocky. I just forgot. Please join me.
Well, I don't usually, but since I suggested it, I will.
Here you are.
Thanks. You know something? I wonder how the poor people are making out. Here we are, warm in a mink-lined office, not a worry in the world. Smug as a bug in a rug.
Did you say smug?
That I did. I suddenly heard myself talking, I guess.
Strange you should say that. I was just thinking that about myself.
Problems?
Oh, not mine. A friend. Wonder how you'd handle this.
Well, try me for size.
I can't tell you what the problem is, Rocky. Legally, as an attorney, I should turn it over to the police. Yet it'd break his heart if it did.
Well, can I find out about it from the friend?
It's an idea. You can. Tell you what, Rocky, I'll write down a name and address. Here are the keys to my car. Take it and go right over.
The name and address on the card sent me uptown to a swank number in the 90s. The plush elevator took me to a Doctor's Park Avenue fantasy, nestled high among the 32nd floor hills of solid concrete and mahogany. The name on the card opened the door himself. Dr. Jonas?
Oh, come in, Mr. Fortune. Perry Shane called me about 15 minutes ago. Let's go over here into my study. We'll be more comfortable.
Fine, if I can wade through this rug.
Yes. I just want to make sure of one thing before we go into the study. Excuse me. Stanley?
Yes, Dad?
I just wanted to make sure you were in. Make sure you talk to me before you leave.
Don't worry. I'm right here.
That's my son. Everyone else is gone. I wanted to make sure we weren't overheard.
Yeah, it's a real lush layout. You live here too, Doc?
I have the entire floor. I live and office here. Of course, being head of the Witherspoon Clinic, I also office over there. Please sit down.
Thanks. What's on your mind, Doc?
Perry has told you nothing of what's going on.
From where I sit, he's clean. He knows nothing about it.
I suppose it has to be that way. As an attorney, he'd be duty-bound to go to the police.
Maybe I can help get you started. From the way you talk to your son, I figure maybe he's in trouble.
We're both in trouble. I have to inventory next week, and I have no way of explaining the disappearance since I can't account for it in my records.
Disappearance of what, Doctor?
Why, drugs, Mr. Fortune. A large quantity of drugs have been stolen from my cabinets.
So why not call the cops?
Because the thief is my son, Mr. Fortune.
Do you know how much is missing?
Over the past year, I'd say at least $25,000 worth.
Wow. Isn't that a lot of dope for one doc to be stocking?
That's for this office and the clinic. However, it is a ridiculous amount. Additional orders have gone through with my signature forged to them. I found one in my son's room. He's not only a thief, he's a forger as well.
Is he on the stuff?
Of course. He's been on it for quite some time.
Can't you quiet the whole thing by just sending him away for the cure?
If it were only that simple. I have to keep narcotic records, of course. I have to account for everything I prescribe. How can I account for $25,000 worth of drugs in 1 year? The amount is ridiculous.
And that means if you don't put them in a can, you lose your license and you go to jail yourself.
Exactly.
He can't possibly be taking that amount himself.
Of course not, and he refuses to tell me what he's been doing with it.
How about letting me talk to him?
I wish you would. I can't talk to him anymore. I get almost hysterical. I keep wishing that I can't even say it.
Why don't you try? Might ease you off a bit.
My wife died 4 years ago. I keep wishing that He had died instead of her.
Oh, take it easy, Doc. Let me talk to him. So I find out that the streets can be dirty even on Park Avenue. This is for real, the doctor's dilemma. Here's a guy who's got everything in the world to give his kid, and the kid fouls up with the dirtiest mud in the whole world. Dope. This boy I put on my list even before I made the talk with him. I shook fins with a wet fish, and he went right to the top of the list.
Mr. Fortune is trying to help you out of your mess. Now try to be civil to him. I'll be in the other room.
Who needs you?
Why, you young...
Take it easy, boys. Make some pictures for an outsider, and maybe something can happen.
And call me if he gives you any trouble.
Since when can you handle me?
Slow down, Junior. If he can't, I can.
Now, look, creep. If you want to help somebody, join the Salvation Army.
Here. You didn't dig that kind of jive out of Park Avenue. Where'd you get it?
I have nothing to say to you.
So we'll call the feds, and you'll say it to them.
He wouldn't dare call anyone. Son in jail? Huh.
I guess you'd feel better if your old man went to jail in your place.
What are you talking about?
Exactly what I said. He's got his records to worry about, son. His drug records can't possibly jive since he can't account for all the stuff you swiped. Think it over, Buster.
Why, I didn't think of that.
You didn't think, period. Now, come on, give with some information.
Well, what do you want to know?
That's better. What did you do with most of the stuff you swiped? I mean, outside of what you used yourself.
I sold the stuff at school.
But why? Doesn't the old man give you enough loot?
I guess so. Ordinary expenses.
So what's the extraordinary expenses?
Well, the usual thing. Dates. I played some horses.
And you also maybe needed something stronger than the stuff you swiped from your old man. Something like heroin.
Oh, look, please. Please don't tell my father. He doesn't know yet that it's heroin.
Why don't you stop it, kid? If you're on the kick, get off of it.
I can't. I tried. I tried everything.
You tried everything but going to your old man who could cure you.
I couldn't go to my old man for anything. He don't know I'm alive.
All right, take it easy now. Sit down. Dr. Jonas.
Yeah?
Will you come here for a minute? Now, look, kid. When your father gets in here, I'm going to make the same question, and you give me the same answer. Maybe if we blow some of the smoke away, we can get the team together.
Having trouble with my son?
No, no trouble at all, Doc. Please sit down.
It's an effort to sit in the same room with him.
Well, maybe if you sat in the same room a little more often, this wouldn't have happened.
You two are still on the same team, so act like it, will you? Now, look, just a couple of minutes ago, Doc, I asked your son why he didn't go to you to ask him to kick the heroin.
Heroin? My own son on that filthy habit, and I didn't know it?
That's what I'm getting at. You, a doctor with a son on the rottenest kick of all, and you haven't seen enough of him to see it.
Where did you get it, Stan? I don't have heroin in my office.
He hasn't told me yet, Doc. But I'll make he buys the stuff with the loot he makes by selling the milder stuff he swipes from you.
Well, why? You have money from your mother's estate?
Doctor, look.
Yes, look. Look at my son, a thief, a forger.
Why do you think he did all of this, Doc?
Who knows why he did it? What would make my own son put me in a position where I would either have to send him to jail or be sent there myself?
I'm sorry, Dad. I never realized about the drug record. She said that... I mean, I didn't know.
I looked at the old man to see if he caught the slip. No action. I looked at the kid. He was beginning to look better. Instead of the wet fish I thought I saw at first, my impression took to the right flank march. This was another poor little rich kid. He could have all the laughs he wanted. But I guess a laugh is kind of empty when nobody home laughs with you. The father was a Frankenstein to his son, and the old man didn't know why. And it was time for the son to get a friend to turn to. I put myself in front of him on what I hoped was the right turn. He played right down the line.
I'm sorry I caused the old man all this trouble.
It's now his middle name, kid, and it's pretty much in your lap to get him out, and yourself, too.
Well, what can I do? Just go to the police?
Nah, he won't be off the hook if you're in the can, kid. He's not a bad guy, you know.
Yes, I guess I know.
Now, look, before we do anything, let's clear up one little miss.
What do you mean?
The name of the dame you were thinking about when your tongue did a tailspin a little while ago.
I wasn't thinking about anybody in particular.
Stan, to bring those words in front of your ears, I make the quotation. You started to say, she said that, and you tried to rub out the statement.
Who's the she?
Rocky, I can't involve her. Since Mother died, she's the only friend I've had.
Does she know your father?
Well, of course, but she wouldn't do anything to hurt him.
If she knew about the drug records and let it go on, believe me, she'd hurt him. Is she more important to you and your old man?
I don't know. Why can't I go to the police and confess the whole thing? Why do I have to hurt everybody I love?
The lights went on all over the world. 19 years old and in love with the only gal he could turn to. A gal who knew something about the narcotics racket. This the doc must know about. He did.
There's only one girl he can possibly mean, but it never entered my mind that she could be involved. Why, she's been with me ever since she finished her training.
What kind of training? She a nurse?
Of course, my nurse, Miss Carroll.
Young, curvy, nice soft shoulder for the kid to weep on?
I suppose so. Frankly, I never took too much notice.
You know, for a doc, you don't seem to take much notice of anything. Does she keep your drug records?
She keeps them, but she locks them up in my desk drawer.
Where can we find this Miss Carroll, Doctor?
I sent her home, so I suppose we can find her there. Do you really think she's gotten him involved in this?
Well, he's a very young and tender 19. And he thinks he's in love, and you can make book that this Carroll is the object of his affections.
If that's the case, let's get the police after her.
The feds are awful careful about how doctors use the narcotic supplies. If an order is out of line, they investigate. So with the amount of stuff Junior had faked as coming to Park Avenue address, it couldn't have been possible to get away with it. Some of it had to be sent to another spot they could get at. That spot could be the clinic. The finger was right in Carol's eye. As the doc put the finger in Miss Carroll's doorbell.
Who is it?
Dr. Jonas, Miss Carroll.
Oh, just a minute, Doctor. I'll slip into a robe.
Tell her it's come as you are, party. We'll save time.
Time is something we have very little of. Both narcotic inventories must be made next week and sent in.
Check. If she's up to her neck, she's got to move out before then, right?
Right.
So, we see which way she moves when we give her a real strong arm to use. Incidentally, let's keep the confab low out here. Play this cool and follow the leader. Just don't be thrown by anything I might come up with.
Sometimes I don't quite understand your language, Rocky, but I do understand the things you've pointed out. I know now how I've failed as a father.
Well, if my plan works, at least you'll have made up for part of it. The kid's on the kick. We know he has forged orders, but we don't know everything. Since he feels he's in love with his baby, could be playing hero.
Yes, but no matter what happens, I know he has to pay for what he's done.
Shh, careful.
Sorry to keep you waiting, Doctor. I didn't know anyone was with you. Come in, please.
Thank you, Miss Carroll. This is Mr. Fortune.
How do you do, Mr. Fortune?
It's nice to see you, Miss Carroll. And I do mean nice.
Thank you very much. Won't you have a chair?
Sorry to intrude at your home, Miss Carroll, but this man has come to me with some very alarming news.
Really? Concerning me?
News about you would be a three alarm.
How quaint.
I told the doc here news about his junior. News that's worth dough to me. He said he wouldn't pay it till he talked it over with you. I said, fine, as long as I sit in on the chat. Start chatting, Doc.
Mr. Fortune tells me my son is on heroin. Did you know that, Miss Carroll?
So you finally know. Yes, I've known about it for a month now. I knew it'd break your heart, and I've been doing everything possible to get him off it. I even promised to arrange a quiet cure for him.
It's a little late for that, sweetie. How quiet the deal is depends on how the doc acts.
What do you mean?
I mean the kid's been peddling, too.
That's impossible.
I said he's been peddling. I know, because he peddled to me. Of course, I ain't interested in the chicken stuff he steals from his old man and sells. I only got time for the stronger stuff he uses himself.
Do you mean he's been stealing narcotics from the office? I refuse to believe it.
Doc, did I show you pictures of the kid handing the stuff over to me?
It's true, Miss Carroll. I've seen the pictures.
But Stanley's on heroin. We have no heroin either at the office or at the clinic. Do you know where he gets it?
I don't care about that. I'm only interested in my son. I'll see to it that he gets off the filthy stuff, but I can't have him treated as a common addict. I'll pay any amount of money to keep it quiet until he's cured.
Unwise of you to say that, Doctor, in front of a blackmailer.
Now look, sister, get one thing straight. I don't like the dirty money, so don't give me the blackmail bit. I'm on the stuff, and I admit it. I've been on it a long time, and it costs real dough. And I need the dough to keep me on it. Have you got any ideas on how I can get the stuff? I'll let the doc off the hook.
Doctor, you said you would pay any amount of money to keep this quiet.
Of course I will. You think I want to see my son like this man, willing to lie, cheat, steal, do anything because he has to have the stuff, I'll pay every cent I have.
Well, why don't you let me talk to this man, Doctor? Perhaps I can help.
Tell you what, Doc. I'll hold the picture as long as I get the stuff. If the little lady here helps me, fine. In the meantime, don't call me. I'll call you. I felt like giving the doc an Oscar for falling in with the line I was pushing out. Now it was up to me to keep the little lady entertained till he got back to Junior and gave him the lowdown. I was pretty sure of one bit. Papa had much more chance of getting Junior to listen to him now. But the kid had to be tipped before she got to him, and she was bound to call as soon as she was alone. So I had to keep steady company with this chick till Junior learned the facts of life. The doc took the hint and left us alone. Charm school went to work.
You said all you wanted out of your negotiation is to be able to get the stuff you need?
Long as I get what I need, I make like a mummy, but I hold on to the picture.
What will you take to let loose of the picture?
I already told the old man. 10 grand in cash.
You'll give up the negative if I get 10,000 for you?
Well, the doc brought me here, but no reason why I can't do business with you.
I'll go to the bank first thing in the morning. You have the negative here by 10:30 a.m. I'll tell the doctor I won't be in tomorrow until 11:15.
Cutting yourself in a little bit, huh?
I'm looking after the doctor's interest. If you go near him again, I'll see to it that you don't get a cent.
Don't worry about me, sister. As long as I get that dough, I'll be able to get all the stuff I need. That's all I want.
Oh, stop whining. Beat
okay,
it.
Okay. Don't get mad. Please don't get mad. I'll have that negative here at 10:30. Honest, I will. Now, if the kid isn't too far involved, we're in business. So far, it looked like the little lady was taking all the bait we tossed out. The lady also had to work fast because she must know her little game is over when the inventory's taken. In the meantime, I had to deliver a negative in the morning. Stan and I looked at the birdie in a home-sized camera, took the negs to a friendly photographer, and in the morning I would be set with this item. Next, I had to have a heart-to-heart with the kid. By this time, he was willing to spill.
I never even saw the extra stuff that came to the office and the clinic.
But I thought you said you sold it to the kids, you know.
He only said that because he thought he was protecting her. Right, son?
Well, that's right, Dad. I just wanted to confess to the whole thing to keep her name out of it. I guess I've been a fool about everything. Her, too.
Well, if you've reached the age of 19 and have only been a fool over one woman, I'm proud of you.
Those words are nice music to my ears, Doc, but we got a long road to haul before we're out of the wood. This little cookie's been plenty smart. She had Stanley forge your name to those orders, and that's still a big federal offense.
That means I'll still go to jail.
Somebody's got to take the rap when that true inventory's taken next week. You could still be that somebody. Father and son looked pretty ragged when I told them that, but at least they were now standing together. What happened depended on what the chick did after I gave her the phony picture negative. I didn't know any of the narcotics gang, so I figured I'd better not have them in on a party that just might not come off. Better I should have my pal, Sergeant Finger, let him bring them in. A call to him set his part of the plan.
Even on Park Avenue, you can't stay out of the soup.
Finger, look. The kid only went wrong because of the old man. How many kids do you know where this happens? Play along with me and give the kid a break.
Smart guy. You know I got 6 kids. What else can I do?
Wonderful. Now look, we're all set now. You bug the doc's office and set up in the apartment below. I already got permission from the people who live there.
You're awful sure of me. I hope you're as sure of what's gonna happen.
I'm not sure. It's a chance. It's his only chance. What's the idea of the army, Finger? I thought you weren't going to bring narcotics till we knew whether we were right or wrong.
Whether you were right or wrong, Rocky, you don't monkey with the feds. Somebody goes to the pokey. We're set up now so we can hear everything that's said in the doctor's office.
I know. And if Carol says what I hope she says, the kid's in the clear. If not...
If not, they take in the kid with the girl.
Well, I was just hoping I'd get a chance for another brainstorm, if I'm wrong. I give her the picture and the neg, and she knows the time is up when that inventory goes in. Now... If she only makes the move. So we listen.
This is all a little difficult for me to understand.
Nothing difficult about it, Doctor. You said you'd pay any amount of money to keep your son out of jail. I'm offering you the out.
I've changed my mind about that, Miss Carroll. If my son has been selling narcotics to other juveniles, I'm afraid he must be prosecuted.
Look, Doctor, Your son is guilty of one thing. He forged your name to those orders. Of course, he's also an addict.
You mean my son did not steal any of the narcotics? He did not sell them?
I controlled the whole setup. I supplied him with the stuff he used himself. I did the whole thing. And I know the time's short now. If he sold some stuff to this fortune, it couldn't have been much. But I now have the proof. And I'm holding the proof until you give me the money I need to get out of the country.
Then you mean you're willing to take the blame for everything if I turn over 100,000 cash?
That's right. I'll have that money plus what I've been making throughout the year on the sale of the other stuff. I'm willing to admit my game, Sam.
Move in and take all this down, boys. And then you can move upstairs and take her.
It worked out exactly as you thought, Rocky, but I'm still in the dark as to how you figured her actions.
Well, the time for the kid was short. Just 1 week and the whole thing would be discovered. But the time was just as short for her. She had to get out. So when we dreamed up that picture of the kid selling the stuff to me and you said you'd pay anything to keep him in the clear, well, she figured she'd buy it from me at $10,000 to sell it to you for $100,000. Then she gives you the bit that the whole thing can be blamed on her when the shortage is discovered.
And being lost in some part of the world with enough money to last a lifetime, she knew she'd be safe.
Exactly.
And she only had him sign the fake signature to keep a stronger hold on him.
Right again.
Now, if we can only straighten out Stan, what do you think will happen with him?
Well, first thing, since he's got a father again, Shane thinks he'll get a suspended sentence. He'll get the cure, and that's that. You know, if you'd only have realized one thing, this probably wouldn't have happened to the kid at all.
And what's that?
Well, when your wife died, you lost a wife, your son lost a mother.
You're right. That's when I went to pieces and failed him. Funny that coming from you. Your language doesn't sound like a college man. Your logic does.
That's easy too, Doc. You see, the school where I learned my logic, they don't teach language.
NBC has presented Frank Sinatra as that footloose and fancy-free young gentleman, Rocky Fortune. Others in tonight's cast included Maurice Hart, Raymond Burr, Jack Carroll, Georgia Ellis, and Barney Phillips. Tonight's script was written by Norm Sickle. Andrew C. Love directed. Now, to tell you about next week's adventure, here's Frank Sinatra as Rocky Fortune.
According to the statistics, the average joker can expect to annoy the census taker until he's about 66. Next week, I'll tell you about a friend of mine who advised me to take out life insurance because you couldn't trust these figures. And to prove his point, he produced a fresh corpse. I'll tell you about it next week. See you around.
Enjoy Fibber, McGee, and Molly tonight on the NBC Radio Network.
Adventures of the Saint, starring Vincent Price. The Saint, based on characters created by Leslie Charteris and known to millions from books, magazines, and motion pictures. The Robin Hood of modern crime now comes transcribed to radio, starring Hollywood's brilliant and talented actor Vincent Price as the Saint.
It's perfectly all right, Miss Ames. Oh, please don't go.
I must. The police...
are now at the scene of the crime. They'll take care of things. I can see you're in a hurry.
Yes, I am.
All right, driver, step on it.
Yes, sir.
Comfortable, Miss Ames?
I don't know you, do I?
An oversight on my part that can be easily remedied. I'm Simon Templar.
Simon Templar?
Yes.
Oh, you're the saint, aren't you?
Sometimes I feel as though I had a neon sign on my forehead. I'll confess the fatal appellation.
Well, I think I'd better get out, Mr. Templar. You see,
I've got... Saint is not synonymous with boogeyman, Miss Ames, and why not call me Simon? After all, we were both present at the unveiling of the corpse.
If you think you're being funny, Mr. Templar...
There's nothing funny about murder, particularly when as pretty a girl as you is involved.
But I'm not involved.
A question of semantics, Miss Ames. A man gets killed when you're within 5 feet of him and you turn tail and run. If that's not being involved, my dictionary lied to me.
Well, I suppose you're right. It was foolish of me to run, but when I heard those shots and saw him fall, I... How did you know who I was?
Such modesty is becoming, but hardly intelligent, Miss Ames. You're a star. Your show is opening in a week, and your pictures have been plastered all over town.
Oh, of course, I should have known.
Did you know the man who was shot at?
Yes. Yes, I had an appointment with him. His name was Jim Barry.
Oh, the publisher?
Yes.
Oh, I know him, or rather knew him. He's been kind enough to publish some scribblings of mine, but what were you going to see him about? Anything special?
No, just a business talk.
A business talk with a publisher? Don't tell me that Barry Kilgore Company is going to publish the story of your life.
No, but Jim's firm was preparing an anthology of the modern theater, and he wanted to include the new play I'm going to be in.
Down, Betty. Now, down to the floor. I said down!
What happened?
Somebody doesn't like us, Betty. The driver of that car threw some hot lead our way.
But who? It wasn't
I don't know. I only saw the glint of a gun out of the corner of my eye. Hey, driver, are you a...
Simon, is he dead?
Wait out. Now, how do you like that? We get shot at and he faints.
I don't blame him. I feel a
little... Well, don't. You must be due at the theater for rehearsal about now, and the show must go on, though for the life of me, I've never been able to understand why.
Here's my dressing room, son.
Oh.
You go in and wait for me. I'd have you watch the rehearsal from the wings, but Larry Stevens, our stage manager, is superstitious about it.
Okay, Betty, but your sanctified watchdog will be panting on your threshold as you get back.
After what's happened, Simon, I'll be glad to know you're close by. See you later.
Yeah. Oh, well, might as well wait inside.
But really, Vera, I don't know what you mean.
I think you do, Helen. Just remember what I told you about Jim Barry, and you'll be...
Simon Templar, what in the world are you doing here?
Hello. Now, that's what I call a quick switch. Vera Pangborn, lady novelist, gets stage struck. Or are you merely getting material for a novel about backstage?
Oh, no. No theater novels for me, Simon. Oh, let me introduce Helen Trask. Helen, this is Simon Templar.
How do you do, Mr. Templar?
As well as might be expected under the circumstances, Miss Trask. Not too accustomed to entering one lovely lady's dressing room and finding two others awaiting me.
Well, as a matter of fact, Helen and I were waiting for Jim Barry. We thought he was coming here with Betty.
Jim Barry? Oh, he's your publisher, isn't he, Vera?
Yes, and Helen's, too. Helen's his really latest discovery. She has a new novel coming out.
Well, I'm afraid you're going to be disappointed, ladies. Barry's been unexpectedly detained.
Oh, and I was so anxious to see you.
Oh, why not let me substitute? I'm very good at parlor tricks and small talk. And...
Your name, Templar?
Yes, it has been for a number of years. I can remember way back when my parents...
What's the big idea of keeping Miss Ames away from rehearsal?
Oh, did I? Who are you? Oh, Stevens, the stage manager.
That's right, and I'm also the guy who doesn't like stage door John.
Now, there's something about the way you said that that hurts me deeply. Hey, what's that thing in the cuff of your trousers, Stephen?
In the cuff of my trousers?
Yeah, right here.
Now, look here, Templar. I don't know what this is all about,
maybe
but...
you don't, but you should know a revolver cartridge when you see one.
Revolver cartridge? Is that what this is?
It is. Where's Betty Ames?
Why, in rehearsal, I had them start.
And I presume there's a shooting scene in this play?
Why, yes, toward the end of the first act, but I...
Well, you'll like me even less after this, but I'm stopping that rehearsal.
But you can't do that, Templar.
If I don't, you'll have a dead star on your hands.
Betty Ames, are you crazy?
I hope so.
Mr. Templar!
I hear them. Where's the closest stage entrance?
Over there, to your left. I hope you know what you're doing.
I'm afraid I do.
They're at the shooting scene now.
Stop it. Don't shoot.
Simon, what's the matter?
Apparently nothing, but I'm a little amazed at finding you all right.
But why shouldn't I be, Simon?
Now, there you have me.
Quiet, quiet, everybody. Templar, I've had enough of this nonsense. You've held up the rehearsal by keeping Betty away, and now you've broken up the end of the first act. Either you get out of this theater, or I'll have you thrown out.
You know, Stevens, I must be super sensitive. Why else would I get the idea that you don't like me? No, don't answer. There's something I want to do first. Where's the gun your leading man fired just now, Betty?
Oh, it's over there on the floor, just a prop gun with blank cartridges.
Blank cartridges? So that's it. I've always wondered how people shot in plays had so many lives. You mind if I take a look?
What's all the commotion about?
Oh, hello, Mr. Kilgore. We've been having a little trouble with a fellow named Templar, but everything's under control.
Well, it better be. I've got quite an investment in the show, and the way it looks now, it'll flop before they get to the second act.
Now, there's nothing for you to get excited about, Mr. Kilgore. I assure you that...
Of course, that's all in the way one looks at it, Stevens. And I suggest that you look at this gun.
I see it, Templar. So what?
So this. Break it open.
Son, those aren't blank cartridges. They're real.
Real?
But that's impossible.
Perhaps you'd better take a second look.
But why would anyone in this theater substitute real bullets for the blanks?
Now, that is a puzzling question, Stevens. Of course, it couldn't possibly be that someone was interested in killing Betty Ames. Now, could it?
Understand how you knew Simon.
Well, theatrical people may dress somewhat unconventionally, but I thought that Stevens with revolver cartridges in his trouser cuffs was going a bit overboard. Fortunately, your leading man is a sensitive soul. He jumped at least a foot when I shouted at him as he fired.
Oh, if you hadn't startled him.
Yeah, then I doubt that we'd be sitting here in your dressing room.
But why should anyone want to kill me?
The usual motives are money, jealousy, and fear of discovery.
But I'm not rich, and there's no reason for anyone being jealous of me, and I don't know a thing about anyone.
Are you certain of that, Betty?
Of course I am.
You were pretty much in evidence when Jim Barry was killed.
But so were a dozen other people.
Yeah, but perhaps they didn't see what you saw.
I didn't see anything.
At the killing, perhaps. But what about, well, a familiar face in the crowd, for example?
Familiar face? Mm. No, oh, wait a minute, yes. Yes, I did see someone.
The eyes have it, you saw the killer. Who was it?
That's just it. I don't know.
Let me remind you that a familiar face belongs to someone you know or have seen before.
Yes, I know that, Simon, but I just caught a flash of the face, and I was thinking it looked familiar and was starting to identify it in my mind, and then the shots were fired and Jim Barry was killed, and then it was gone. Hmm.
I don't suppose you got a similar flash among the people in the theater tonight?
No. Might have been any one of them or none of them.
Hardly what I'd call an elucidating statement. Let's put this together. Barry was the publisher for Vera Pangburn and Helen Trask, and both of them were in the theater.
Mm-hmm.
Kilgore, who put up the money for the show, was Barry's partner in the publishing business, and he was in the theater. Stevens, the stage manager...
had that cartridge in his cuff.
Yes, he did, didn't he?
So where does that get us, Simon?
Exactly nowhere. Well, as my old grandmother used to say, if at first you don't succeed, try checking up on the corpse. Come on, Betty. Let's go to the morgue.
This place gives me the creeps, son.
Strangely enough, the morgue never was noted for being the most cheerful place in the world.
Do you think your scheme will work?
How optimistic can one man be?
Looking for someone, Mr. Templar.
Hello there, Duncan. How are things?
Things? Oh, they're pretty dead around here. Pretty dead.
Same jolly old soul, aren't you?
Oh, I get my kicks, Mr. Templar.
How peachy for you. Feel jolly enough to do me a favor?
Maybe.
Yeah. Did you get an advanced case of rigor mortis in here sometime this evening? A fellow by the name of Barry?
Barry?
Yeah.
You sure did. Gun killing. Neat job, too. You want to see him?
Oh, no.
I bow to the lady, Duncan. But you know, I have a theory that every murdered man dies with exactly $11.63 in his pocket.
You have?
Mm-hmm.
But how could that be, Mr. Templar?
Let's look at his personal effects and see. Hey, Duncan?
Personal effects?
Yeah.
Well, I ain't so sure I ought to No, sir, can't. You know the rules.
Oh, of course. I'm sorry I mentioned it, but Miss Ames was anxious to see if those opening night tickets to her new show, the ones in your name, that is, could possibly have been lost around here somewhere.
Oh. $11.63, you say?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's an interesting theory, Mr. Templer. And we can't block the progress of science, can we?
No, indeed.
There you are. Take a look.
Wallet, jewelry, a couple of key rings.
There's a couple of $100 in the wallet. Smashes our theory all to tunket, don't it?
Is that all there was on him?
Well, see for yourself. I told you that. Oh. Hey, look out.
Hey, grab it, Duncan. I'm going to faint you. Oh.
Yeah, okay, miss. Okay,
oh,
I got
thank
you.
Thank you, thank you. I don't know what happened. Suddenly everything turned black.
All right, Betty, don't talk. I'll get you outside. Even an old ghoul like Duncan gets queasy in here sometimes.
No, I don't either. You sure you're okay, miss?
Yes, thank you. I'm all right now. Thanks very much, Mr. Duncan.
Well, you're welcome. And, them opening night tickets in my name you lost?
Oh, you'll find them at the box office in your name, Mr. Duncan.
Well, I'm glad you folks dropped in.
The first part of your scheme seemed to work all right, Simon.
Well, I did get hold of Barry's keys, and thanks to the fainting act you staged, and very realistic it was, too. But there was little else of interest there.
Then what goes on now?
Well, I might suggest that we halt right here in front of the office of Barry Kilgore and Company Publishers. You got a key that looks as though it fits the lock? Mm-hmm. And walk right in. There, you see what skill, perseverance, and some petty larceny can accomplish? Now, where's Jim Barry's office? Do you know?
Oh, yes. Right over there.
Uh-huh.
Kilgore's the one next to it. There's the light switch on the wall.
You'll never make an understudy to a sneak thief by talking about lights, Betty. My flashlight's enough.
But I still don't understand what you expect to find up here, Simon.
Neither do I, but I'm looking for motives. And what better place to find motives than in the dead man's private files? Let's start with this stuff on the desk.
Well, those are only galley proofs of a book, Simon.
So it would appear. What a fascinating title. My Heart's One Romance by Helen Trask.
Oh, no. Talk about corn. No motive for murder there.
I wonder.
What do you mean?
This inter-office memo clipped to it. Listen to this. For Pete's sake, Jim, stop publishing this kind of tripe before it ruins us. It's initialed K. K for Kilgore.
What do you make of that, Simon?
I think Kilgore didn't like the book.
But if it's as bad as all that, why was Jim Barry publishing it?
Maybe you better take another look at Helen Trask.
Oh, you mean you think that Helen and Jim Barry were...
I prefer to keep an open and clean mind about these things, Betty. But we do know Kilgore didn't like it. And Kilgore stands to get plenty now that Barry's dead. He becomes sole owner of the business.
Simon, someone's coming to the outer office.
That's very inconsiderate of him.
But what if it's the police or Jim Barry's murderer?
The suggestions are very inconsiderate of you.
What's he doing now, Simon?
Now, he... There are two people in the office.
Are they coming in here?
No, they've gone into Kilgore's office.
Oh.
They didn't turn on the light, so they must be familiar with the place. Remind me to complain to the owners of this building. They've made these walls so soundproof, I can't even recognize the voices, let alone hear...
Simon!
Yeah, we could hear those all right, couldn't we? I'll be right back.
No, Simon, please!
Oh.
Simon!
Oh, whoever it was got away.
Simon, are you all right? I'll get a doctor.
You better make it a carpenter instead, Betty. Yeah, the shot's missed, but I certainly smashed up that desk I ran into. Come on, find the lights and see how much damage was done. That does it now.
Simon!
The damage was quite extensive to Mr. Kilgore. Our chief suspect has been crossed off the list by a bullet between his eyes.
at least you got me home safe and sound, Simon.
After what's gone on today, I'm beginning to wonder how that happened. Does everything look to be in place?
Yes, of course.
Betty, it's a funny thing, but ever since my college prom days, I've had an abiding dislike for chaperones popping up unexpectedly. I'd better look around. Look, don't let these modern inventions frighten you, Betty. The telephone is quite harmless.
My nerves are... I'll answer.
Good.
Hello?
Betty, this is Vera Pangborn.
Oh, yes, Vera.
I want you to do me a favor, Betty. I think I know something about Jim Barry's death.
Just a minute, Vera. Simon, it's Vera Pangborn. She says she thinks she knows something about the Barry killing.
Well, don't be piggish about things. Split the receiver with me and let me listen, too.
Vera? What do you mean?
Well, I don't know just how to explain it, Betty, but... Get away from that window!
Vera! What is it?
No! No, no!
Vera! Vera! Are you still there? Simon, those were shots. What happened there?
This may come as a tremendous surprise, Betty, but it sounds like Vera Pangborn just became murder victim number 3. Use brawn instead of brains. Unaffected, it's not neat. Come on, let's go in.
Simon, there she is.
Yeah.
On the floor.
Right.
Is she?
She's luckier than Barry or Kilgore. Shot in the upper part of the arm. You better get some towels, Betty.
I'll be right back, Simon.
Good.
What happened? Simon... Man, on the fire escape is shot at me.
I'd be indignant about it too, Vera, but suppose we talk about it later.
Here you are, Simon. You better let me at it.
Wait up. I'll lift her out of the davenport. There. Now, if you'll make like Florence Nightingale, Betty, I'd like to look at the fire escape.
All right, Simon. Betty, darling, time for talk later. Let's get you fixed up first. You just relax. Vera, we're here and everything's going to be all right.
The view from your fire escape is very disappointing, Vera. Only shattered glass out there. Did this homicidal friend of yours shoot through the window?
Yes. I was talking on the phone to Betty. I looked up and saw him. He had a handkerchief over his face and he shot twice.
There you are, Vera. And that'll hold you until we get a doctor.
By the way, Vera, not that I'm curious or anything, but what was it you were going to tell Betty over the phone about Jim Barry's murder?
I can't tell you, Simon.
Well, I'll admit I'm not as pretty as Betty or as feminine.
No, I won't say anything. He's already shot at me once. I won't say anything. He'll kill me.
Vera, take it easy. You don't have to tell us anything. Simon, we better call a doctor. She's in no condition to be bothered now.
Right now, neither am I. Suppose you take care of the medical details and then meet me at Helen Trask's apartment.
At Helen's?
Yeah.
Is that where you're going now?
No, I'm going to Larry Stevens' place. And if that sounds confusing to you, it's no wonder. I'm a little confused myself.
Yes?
Hello, Stevens. You mind if I step inside?
Templar, what in blazes are you doing here?
I guess you do mind. Oh, well... I have an invitation for you, Stevens, to come calling on Helen Trask with me.
Helen Trask?
Mm-hmm.
Why should I go to her place?
Oh, I thought it would be sweet if we all chewed over a few explanations together.
You'll get no explanations from me. Now get out, Templar.
Okay, Stevens. But if you don't mind, I would like to leave you something first.
Yes, what's that?
This! Oh. You know something, Stevens? I think you're coming with me whether you want to or not. Now that Betty is here, we have a quorum.
But I don't understand, Mr. Templar. Why are you all here at my apartment?
There's no sense asking him, Helen. He's completely crazy.
Stevens, I think you're prejudiced because your jaw still aches a little, Miss Trask, when I entered Betty's dressing room tonight, Vera was saying something to you about Jim Barry. What was it?
Why, she was merely warning me against him, said he had a weakness for young women writers.
Well, in your case, that's understandable. Would you say his weakness could account for a rather poor manuscript being accepted?
If you're insinuating anything, Mr. Temple...
Oh, Helen, of course not. You didn't listen to Vera, did you?
Naturally not. Mr. Barry always acted like a perfect gentleman.
What are you driving at anyway, Temple?
Well, let's say I'm a perfectionist, Stevens. I don't like ragged details hanging over, and that snatch of conversation intrigued me. Something else intrigues me, too, that cartridge in the trouser cuff episode.
You really are determined to play Sherlock Holmes, aren't you? Well, if it'll relieve your mind any, on my way to Betty's dressing room, I bumped into a prop table. A box of what I thought were blank cartridges spilled against me and onto the floor.
And you think that there might have been some loaded cartridges among the blanks and that one of them lodged in your cuff?
That's it exactly. A very simple explanation.
Yes, almost too simple. Did you try to check this theory of yours?
Well, I tried to, but when I got back to the table, the box was gone.
Which, of course, makes it even simpler. Do you mind if I use your phone, Helen?
Phone? Oh, I know. No, not at all.
Thanks.
You calling the police, Simon?
No, Vera Pangborn.
Vera Pangborn?
That's right. Hello? Oh, yes, doctor. How's Miss Pangborn? Oh, that's fine. Give her a message, will you, please? Tell her Simon Templer called and she needn't worry about that killer any longer. That's right. Betty Ames has remembered who it was she saw at the scene of the murder, and that's all the evidence we need.
Simon, what is this all about?
Beautiful here in the park, isn't it?
You know very well that I haven't remembered the face I saw when Jim was killed.
A brilliant moon, soft starlight, a perfect night for romance, and she talks about killing.
Oh, please, Simon, please. What are we doing out here anyway?
To take a cue from you, just killing time. And I think we've killed enough. Let's get going.
Simon, for the last time, will you give me a direct answer? Where are we going?
Oh, didn't I tell you, Betty? Why, I'm merely taking you home.
Here's my door, Simon. I can find my way in alone.
Don't you think the least I can do is to search the apartment for you again?
That won't be necessary, thank you. Good night.
Well, at least allow me to turn the lights on for you.
There, you satisfied? Now you can see for yourself that there's... Oh.
Yes, I can see quite well. Hello, Vera.
Up that door, Simon, quickly.
I never argue with a lady, Vera, particularly when she's got a gun in her hand.
That's better. I thought that phone call of yours might have been a trap, Simon, but I had to make sure.
Now that you apparently have made sure, Vera?
You and Betty are going to join the others.
Simon!
Tell me... why you killed Jim Barry, Vera? Was he your husband?
Pretty smart, aren't you, Simon? That's right. Jim was my husband.
Yes, I thought so. Jealousy was the only motive I could figure for you.
Every young woman who came along and thought she could write turned his head. The Helen Trask. A high school girl could write a better book than she did.
But Jim Barry was going to divorce you and marry her, wasn't he?
Yes. And now Jim's dead. And Kilgore's dead because he suspected me. And you're going to die, too, right now.
No, you don't. Give me that
look
gun.
Look out, Simon. She's going to kill me. Great.
No, she isn't. Are you, Vera?
No. No. Oh, Simon, I was so scared.
You know something, Betty? So was I.
Simon, that business of Vera's being shot. Now, how did you know that she'd fake that?
You know, Betty, that's one thing I always dislike about solving a murder. I have to explain things. But if you won't let well enough alone...
No, Simon, I won't.
All right. It was the glass and the fire escape. Now, shall we get back to that moon?
Simon, what about the glass?
Oh, it came from the shattered window. And there was no glass within the room. Therefore, the shot was fired from within, scattering the glass outward. And who was inside the apartment at the time?
Vera.
We have achieved a meeting of the mind. Now, if we can carry that a bit further while discussing those lovely, shimmering stars.
But I heard two shots fired over the phone. Did she use the second one to give herself that flesh wound?
If you were afraid someone was closing in, you'd make a last desperate attempt to throw suspicion elsewhere, wouldn't you?
And she was the one who put the real bullets in the gun in the theater.
Mm-hmm.
And fired at me in the cab. But, Simon, why me?
Well, I hate to get repetitious, but remember those motives for murder I listed?
Money, jealousy, and fear of discovery.
Yeah, let's latch on to the last one. She was afraid you'd remember that it was her familiar face you saw in the crowd just before Jim Barry was killed. Satisfied now?
Well, almost. There's just one more little thing.
Look, Betty, if it doesn't concern the moon, I'm not interested.
All right, Simon. Get interested.
You've been listening to another transcribed adventure of The Saint, the Robin Hood of modern crime. Now here's our star, Vincent Price.
Ladies and gentlemen, as good citizens, we have the entire sphere of American life in which to use our heritage. So let's make the affairs of our nation, state, and community our affairs. Remember that we all have a voice in them. Use that voice, and use it well and often. Only then can we set an example of freedom, knowing that our own American heritage is secure. This is Vincent Price inviting you to join us again next week at this same time for another exciting adventure of The Saint. Good night.
Sidney Marshall. Our cast included Francis Cheney, Barbara Eiler, Eleanor Audley, Frank Gerstle, Stanley Farrar, and Arthur Q. Bryan. Music was composed and conducted by Von Dexter. The Saint, based on characters created by Leslie Charteris, is a James L. Saphir production and is directed by Helen Mack. Vincent Price is soon to be seen co-starring in RKO's production of His Kind of Woman. All you Saint fans will be glad to know that the Saint comic books are on sale at all newsstands. Your announcer is Don Stanley. Programs, get your program, dear. Following now on NBC are two stellar programs you'll want to stay tuned for. Listen next for another exciting adventure mystery on the adventures of Sam Spade. Then hear the NBC Symphony's summer concert with guest artists Helen Traubel and Vladimir Goldschmidt. And congratulations to station WWJ Detroit on this, their 30th anniversary of broadcasting. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
Hey, everyone, this is OTR Rob welcoming you to another adventure of Nero Wolfe. This Nero Wolfe comes from February 9th, 1951. The episode is entitled The Telltale Ribbon. Now, I thought I would come in here to announce that we have yet again another new actor playing Archie Goodwin, and that would be Harry Bartell in the role of Archie Goodwin. Harry Bartell was probably the oldest member in Radio Row, probably even older than Bill Johnstone. And Harry Bartell did a number of lead roles in the run of his career. And among others who would also be in the lead role was Bill Johnstone and William Conrad, among others. So they just about gone through every actor on Radio Row who did leads in certain plays, and Harry Bartell was one of those, and he would fold over into television quite well, but he wouldn't give up radio completely, because you could hear Harry Bartell in the Bob Bailey version of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, often. In fact, he had a running role as one of the insurance investigators that would assign Johnny Dollar to a case. So anyway, so enjoy this Harry Bartell, Archie Goodwin version of Nero Wolfe, and this would end out all of the actors who had played Archie Goodwin up to this point. Harry Bartell would do it five times, I believe. Yeah, five times. So enjoy this, and I'll see you all back here next week.
Ladies and gentlemen, the ringing of that phone bell brings you mystery, adventure.
Nero Wolfe's office, Archie Goodwin speaking.
What? Who? Who is this? Who wants to speak to Mr. Wolfe?
Nobody.
Nobody?
I said that. Hang up. It's late and it's too cold. And even if it weren't, I would not consider for one moment moving from this room.
Please, Mr. Wolf, I can't hear a thing this old gentleman's saying.
Does it matter? You heard what I said? No.
Now, what did you say? You were late because she was killed. Well, who was killed? I can't hear you.
What is it about, Archie?
He says he was due here an hour ago, but she was killed.
Who was killed? What does he want?
Do you want us to solve the crime? I say, do you want us to find out who killed her? Oh. He says he knows who did it, but he has an important message for you. Well, then come right over. We'll be waiting, Mr. Jenkins.
Archie, why do you insist on taking every silly little case?
Because, boss, we need to recover for March 15th.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's that renowned genius who is the bulkiest, balkiest, most ponderous, and most brilliant detective in the world. Yes, none other than that chair-born mass of unpredictable intellect, Nero Wolfe, created by Rex Stout and brought to you in a new series of adventures of this NBC network in the person of Mr. Sidney Greenstreet.
This case I like to refer to as the case of the Telltale Ribbon. Perhaps a better title would be Wolf Goes A-Hunting. For in a way, this was one of those unusual instances in which my boss, of his own free will and without any coercion, actually decided to leave the house and go to the scene of the crime. It started when the strange old gentleman who phoned us finally arrived. Well, there's our client, Mr. Wolf.
Evening. It's me.
Who's me?
Oh, I just phoned you. I'm Jenkins. I got a dispatch for Nero Wolf.
Oh, you're Jenkins. Well, come in, come in. Mr. Wolf, this is Mr. Jenkins. Says he has a dispatch for you.
Yep. Yeah. Are you Wolf?
I am. Where is the dispatch from?
Don't know.
You don't know? How come?
Oh, I know, but I'm supposed to say I don't. See? That's my job.
What is?
Just to say I don't know.
What about the matter?
Yeah, who was killed?
Oh, my goodness. It was a terrible thing. We were just crossing the turnpike, and this fella come at us out of nowhere.
The killer?
Yeah. Must have been drunk, I guess.
Well, how did it happen? Did he shoot her, stab her?
Oh, no, no. He ran into her with his car. And she was only 9 years old.
Your granddaughter?
No, no, it was Bessie. But the police got him. I have to appear, I guess. Probably get 90 days, he will.
The murder?
Murder. Was somebody murdered? I must have missed something.
Look, we're talking about Bessie, and what do you want us to do about it?
Nothing. Bessie's my old horse.
Oh, no.
But say, who was it that was murdered?
Nobody yet. Good night, Mr. Jenkins. I thought you said it was important.
It might be. At least that's the way I was told.
What might be?
This here letter I was bringing to you. This dispatch. Well, got to get along now. Goodbye.
Well, get him. What a pixie.
What is in the envelope?
Mr. Wolf, look. $500 bills. And the note says, Mr. Wolf, your services are desperately needed. Come up this weekend as my guest. Signed, E. Malott.
Edward Malott, the wealthy manufacturer.
Well, looks as though you're going out this weekend.
Well, Archie, pay my respects to Mr. Malott, and I hope you enjoy the weekend. Good night.
Something's certainly phony about this. There's no party going on here tonight.
Yes? What is it?
Is this Malott place?
It is. What do you want?
My name's Goodwin. I'm a guest of Mr. Malott's.
A guest?
Yes, he invited me down for the weekend.
Weekend? Oh, well, you better step in, please, Mr. Goodwin.
Quite a bolt you've got on that door.
Yes, isn't it? Just sit down there, please. I'll get Mr. Malott. He's in the library. Oh, here he is. This is Mr. Goodwin, sir. Says he's come down for the weekend.
Mr. Goodwin, good evening. You've come for the weekend, you say?
Yes, wasn't that the idea, Mr. Malott?
Well, I don't understand, Mr. Goodwin.
Didn't you send me this note asking me to come here?
Note? I did not. Well, well, this is my personal note stationery, but I don't recall sending this. I didn't even type it. And I'm in the habit of signing my name with a pen, not with a typewriter. E. Malott.
You're certainly Edward Malott.
Yes. Services are desperately needed. What does this mean? What services? Who are you, Mr. Goodwin?
Are you serious? I'm a private investigator. I'm Nero Wolfe's assistant.
Oh, indeed. Nero Wolfe, eh? I know of him, yes, indeed.
And you really don't know anything about this note?
I do not.
Are you having a weekend party here?
I most certainly am not.
Then who sent this? And there were five $100 bills as a retainer.
I haven't the slightest idea. Oh, Dorothy.
Yes?
Will you step in here, please? Miss Davis is my private secretary. She may know something about this.
Yes, Mr. Malott. What is it?
Dorothy. Oh. Dorothy, this is Mr. Goodwin.
How do you do, Mr. Goodwin?
Well, how do you do, Miss Davis?
Yes. Well, Mr. Goodwin is assistant to Nero Wolfe.
You don't say. Nero Wolfe, the detective? Well, I've heard a great deal about him. And about you, too, Mr. Goodwin.
Well, now I'm mighty glad to hear you say that, Miss Davis.
Mr. Goodwin has a note here.
Is anything wrong, Edward? I heard voices. Oh, do we have company?
Nothing is wrong, Eva. I was calling Dorothy, that's all.
Oh,
this is Mr. Goodwin, Eva. My wife, Mr. Goodwin.
How do you do, Mrs. Malott?
Mr. Goodwin, yes, how do you do?
Now, as I was about to say, Dorothy, Mr. Goodwin...
What's going on?
Mr. Goodwin, this is my son, Larry.
Good evening. What's wrong?
Mr. Goodwin has been invited here for the weekend. He has an invitation supposedly written by me. At least, it's on my stationery. Look at this, Dorothy. Know anything about this note?
No. I certainly didn't write it.
But it's my personal notepaper, and my signature is typewritten. I'd never do that.
Well, somebody sent it. Who's Jenkins?
Jenkins? Never heard of him.
A little dried-up old man. He delivered it to us. Yeah, maybe it didn't even come from this house.
I'm positive that it didn't. Never heard of Jenkins.
You have a typewriter here, of course.
Yes?
I'd like to see it.
Certainly, Mr. Goodwin, in the library.
How far have you come, Mr. Goodwin?
From New York, Manhattan.
Oh, and it's such a dreadful night, too.
Yes, and it is rather late.
Late? It's only 7:30.
Why not stay here for the night? Plenty of room?
Yes, Mr. Goodwin, plenty of room.
Well, I don't really think that's necessary. On the other hand, it would be a tough drive back to the city in this storm. I'll accept your hospitality, Mr. Malott.
Very good. Jeffries... Show Mr. Goodwin to the East Wing and take care of his car.
Yes, sir.
Good night, Mr. Goodwin.
You mean you're all going to retire now? I haven't even had my dinner.
We retire very early here. But Jeffries will prepare anything you want. Good night.
Oh, dear, who moved that phone? Hello, Wolf speaking.
Archie, boss. Well, I'm here at Malott's place, but there ain't no party.
What happened? Are you in the right house?
I'm afraid I am. They've all gone to bed. Weird bunch. His wife, who looks very sickly and I think wants to say something to me alone, and Larry the son and Malott's secretary, Dorothy Davis. She has me bothered a bit.
How unusual, especially if she's pretty.
A beauty, but she seems to know all about me.
You better come home, Archie. I can see you're in no condition to handle this case properly. Give them the money back.
Oh, I forgot to tell you. They don't want me here. Malott didn't send the note. No one here knows anything about it, so we can keep the dough.
Interesting indeed. The circumstances would indicate that you should stay there and wait for it to happen.
For what to happen?
For whatever it is the fates have conspired to have happen there while your shining little ego is in the midst of it. Hi.
Who is it?
It's Archie Goodwin, Mrs. Malott.
Come in, please.
I saw you give me the eye when I was about to leave. I've been waiting till I felt sure they were all asleep. Now, what's up?
I wrote you that note. I sent for you.
How do I know that?
Old man Jenkins is a scissor and knife sharpener who happens along every month or so. They wouldn't know him. I put five $100 bills in the envelope.
Okay, why?
My life is in danger. I've been threatened. I received three notes through the mail. They were all postmarked in New York City.
Did I see them?
Here they are.
All typewritten.
The first one reads, "There is no love for you in Gray Gables." The second, "Why stay on in the face of death?"
And the third, "The time is shorter than you think." Do you think this is an inside job, Mrs. Malott?
At first I didn't. But lately I've come to think it is.
What caused you to think that?
For some time I've been having severe spells. I thought it was indigestion. But then it occurred to me that I always broke out in cold perspiration. I was left horribly weakened, terribly thirsty.
Thirsty? You fear you're being poisoned?
Yes. And since the thought came to me, I've been living in fear. Fear of every bite of food or drink. It so shattered my nerves that I have to take these yellow sleeping capsules to even close my eyes.
Well, here's your husband and his secretary and your son, Larry.
Larry is my stepson.
Which one do you suspect?
The secretary, Dorothy, or my husband, or both.
What's the motive?
Well, they're in love. She's been here over 2 years, and they've spent most of their time together. The idea never occurred to me till last week. And when I watched them, it was quite obvious.
Anybody else know about these three notes?
Oh, no.
Then I'll keep them for a while. Good night, Mrs. Malott. And don't worry.
What are you doing, Mr. Goodwin, snooping around at Father's library?
Well, Larry, I was just trying to find out if this Remington was the machine you used to type those notes.
What? What notes?
The notes you sent your stepmother.
Why, I don't know anything about any notes.
Then why were you so startled?
I'm not startled. I just, well, why would I threaten her? Well,
so you do know about them. I didn't mention the contents of the notes.
I just happened to see them on the table in her sitting room.
You don't care too much about your stepmother, do you?
Oh, she's all right.
You don't care too much about Dorothy either, do you?
I certainly don't.
Why not?
Well, I don't like her tactics, making a fool out of my father. If anybody here sent those notes, she did.
You think Dorothy would have a motive?
I certainly do.
Of course, you wouldn't have a motive, would you?
No.
Well, I'm inclined to think you would.
Well, just what motive would I have?
You don't seem to like any woman who's too close to your father. Maybe because you'd resent anyone sharing in the estate if your father died.
If I were you, Mr. Goodwin, I'd leave. Tonight. And the sooner the better. Good night.
Archie. Oh, confounded boy. Yes, Archie?
You have the wrong number. This is Sherlock Holmes speaking.
Why don't you go to bed like the others? You don't have to push it. It'll happen.
Eva Malott thinks she's being slowly poisoned. Suspects her husband and his secretary.
He could be right. What are the symptoms she suffers?
Gastric disturbances, weakness, thirst.
Indeed. What about the son? Have any ideas?
He doesn't like his stepmother and is decidedly against his father's secretary, Dorothy. He knew all about the notes Mrs. Malott had received. Saw them on her dressing table. He believes Dorothy's the culprit.
Then I should say that Dorothy should be the next on your list.
You can say that again.
Be careful, Archie. Use your head this time.
Incidentally, Larry advised me to leave the place tonight. Bit of a threat it was, too. What shall I do, Mr. Anthony?
Do nothing. The trouble will come to you. Bye.
Oh, hello there, Mr. Malott. I thought you'd turned in for the night.
It's quite obvious you thought so, Mr. Goodwin. What are you doing in the library?
Just looking for something to read.
You'll find the books all around the walls, not on my desk.
Well, I was looking for a particular kind of book. I'm very much interested in poisons.
Poisons?
Yeah, a hobby of mine. You happen to have any books on toxicology?
I do not.
And what's that book on the fourth shelf right beside you?
Where did that come from? Never saw it before. Perhaps it was in that assorted collection I bought a couple of weeks ago. I hadn't noticed it. Larry probably put them on the shelves.
Mr. Malott, how long have you known Dorothy, your secretary?
A little over 2 years.
Did it ever occur to you that she might be, well, infatuated, in love with you?
What? Well, of all the... Now, see here. I don't know what you're up to, and I don't know how you got hold of my stationery to write that fake note.
It isn't a fake note, Malott. I'm only trying to find out what's back of it.
Mr. Goodwin, there is nothing going on here that requires the services of a detective, and Dorothy is not in love with me.
I didn't say she was. I asked you if you thought she might be.
Well, since this conversation seems to concern me, I suppose I am at liberty to come in.
Oh, you're still up too, Miss Davis.
Did you hear what this man said, Dorothy?
Yes, I did, Mr. Malott. And I'd like to have a few words alone with Mr. Goodwin, if you don't mind. Mr. Goodwin, would you mind coming with me for a few minutes?
No, not at all.
Well, it's rather late, Mr. Malott. Don't you think you should retire? It's a heavy day tomorrow.
Well, yes. Yes, I suppose I should.
And please, don't let this upset you. Mr. Goodwin has been misinformed. I'll straighten him out. Come on, Mr. Goodwin. The bar is right across the hall. I'll fix you a nice, soothing drink.
That'll be nice.
Well, now, what would you like, Mr. Goodwin?
In the way of drinks? Oh, well, some 7-Up.
Really? Just sit down over there.
Okay, what do you want to talk about?
Well, where did you get the idea that I was in love with Mr. Malott?
First, suppose you tell me if you are in love with him.
Yes, I am. But until a few minutes ago, he wasn't even aware of it. I worship him and his work. I never wanted him to know because he's married. It would have caused trouble and I'd have had to leave here. But now he knows it's true.
Well, now that he knows, what will happen?
I'm going to leave tonight. Now.
I see.
And since I don't own a car, Mr. Goodwin, I'm going to ask you to do me a very great favor. Would you run me into New York? I want to leave without a word. If I wait till morning, I'll have to explain to Mr. Malott and... Well, that would be most embarrassing, Archie.
Oh, now it's Archie.
You don't really mind, do you?
No, I guess I don't. I should, maybe, but...
Don't you like your drink?
What'd you put in this drink?
What do you mean?
What'd you dope it with?
Archie, why would I do that?
Might be several reasons.
There's nothing in that drink.
No? And suppose you drink it.
Why? Give it to me. I'll throw it out. If you want another drink, fix it yourself. I'll have my things ready in 5 minutes. Are you going to take me?
Sure. Certainly I'm going to take you. But are you sure you have to go tonight?
I must go tonight. Now.
I wish I knew why. Mr. Wolf's always so right.
What?
Just talking to myself.
Dorothy! Larry! Jeffries! Come upstairs!
What's happened?
Call Dr. Hauser. Something terrible has happened to Eva.
Well, Dr. Hauser?
Oh, poor Mrs. Malott. No, there's nothing to be done now. It's all over.
Eva.
You'd better lie down, Mr. Malott. I'll phone and take care of everything. I'll be here if you need me. I have to make out the certificate.
Yes, come along, Mr. Malott.
Just a minute. You too, Larry. I don't want to make this any more unpleasant for you, but, Doctor, just what are you going to put on the certificate as the cause of death?
Acute gastritis.
Is that what you've been treating her for?
Well, she's had several attacks lately. I'd warned her to be cautious of her diet.
And that was wise advice, too. Did you know about these attacks, Mr. Malott?
Yes, I did.
And you, Dorothy?
Yes, I knew.
And you knew also, Larry?
No, I knew she hadn't been feeling well.
How long had Mrs. Malott been suffering from insomnia?
Oh, a year at least. I prescribed Nembutal.
Yellow capsules?
Of course. I wrote a prescription every so often calling for 12 capsules.
You all knew about that, of course. I thought so. And would this be the prescription, this little box of capsules here on... Well.
What's the matter, Mr. Goodwin?
That box was open on this nightstand when we stepped into this room. All right, let's have the box, Mr. Malott. Thank you. Why'd you pick it up?
Because I didn't want the stigma of suicide on Eva's name, nor mine.
Suicide?
Yes. Eva had this prescription filled yesterday morning. The dose is one at bedtime, 12 capsules. She took one last night. I glanced at the open box when I came into the room, and there were only 8 capsules left. I knew instantly what had happened. She'd taken an overdose.
Doctor, do you think 3 capsules would be sufficient to cause her death?
I doubt it very much.
So do I. Mrs. Malott didn't die from an overdose of sleeping capsules. She was poisoned.
Poisoned? Are you crazy? By whom?
By you. Or Dorothy. Or Larry.
No. I didn't do it. I didn't write those notes.
What notes?
Mrs. Malott had received 3 notes threatening her life if she didn't leave this house. Each of you had a motive, so I'm sending this body to the coroner for an immediate autopsy.
I won't permit it.
The police will see to it. You have no choice.
Yes, Archie. What now? Do you know who did it?
How do you know anything's happened?
Let us call it extrasensory perception.
Well, Mrs. Malott was right. She's dead. Her doctor knew nothing about the spell she was having as being caused by anything but indigestion.
How about an autopsy?
It's all in the works. Looks like a metallic poison, all the symptoms.
Oh? Did you search the house carefully for such a poison?
I did. And I'll check the drugstores in the morning.
Somebody in that house will purchase some poison. Let me know when the autopsy report is in.
Right.
Let's see now. We have Mr. Malott, Dorothy Davis, and Larry the son.
He's Mr. Malott's son, but not the child of Eva Malott, remember?
Yes. Is it true that Dorothy is in love with Malott?
Yeah. Dorothy admitted it to me, but claimed Malott wasn't aware of it until tonight. And earlier this evening, Dorothy tried her best to get me out of the house, insisted that I drive her into town. She tried to give me a drink, which I think might have contained knockout drops.
You don't say. Archie, I should have Fritz drive me up to the Malotte place at once. Archie, are you there?
No, boss. I just fainted.
And that, Mr. Wolfe, is most of the story up to now.
Very interesting. Yes, indeed.
But it isn't true. I did not put anything in Mr. Goodwin's drink.
Then did you ask him to take you into town?
Yes.
And I might have been found in a ditch.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
Why did you try to get Mr. Goodwin to take you to town?
Because I felt it would be too embarrassing to remain until morning.
Maybe you'd already given Mother the big dose of poison and wanted Goodwin out before it was discovered.
Well,
Wait a minute.
Now, Mr. Miller, you claim that you knew nothing about Dorothy being in love with you. Should we believe that?
You can believe it or not.
Dorothy had a motive to get rid of Mrs. Malotte. It seems that Mr. Malotte had one, too.
And so did Larry.
What?
You admitted to me that you didn't like your stepmother.
And that you disliked Dorothy even more.
I didn't say that.
You said Dorothy was making a fool of your father. You resented the possibility of any woman sharing in the estate.
You knew about the sleeping capsules, and you could have put poison in some of them. You could have written those threat notes. And by getting rid of your stepmother and placing the blame on Dorothy, you'd be getting rid of them both.
But I didn't. I did not write those notes.
You were the only one who knew about them.
I was not the only one. I saw Dorothy coming out of Mother's room. It was this afternoon. Mother was out taking his son back. Dorothy did it. She's the one.
I think you're the one.
No, Dorothy wrote those notes.
That's a lie.
No, she probably slipped into Mother's room and wrote those notes on Mother's portable.
What? Hey, just a minute. Archie, come here.
I never heard of such lies.
I didn't do it. You can't send me to jail. I'll kill you first.
Larry, drop that gun.
Don't come near me, any of you.
You're such a fool, Larry.
Give me that gun.
I'll shoot.
Come on.
There.
Now, you better quiet down, kid. Or Inspector Kramer will take care of you when he arrives.
Well, Mr. Wolfe, what goes on here? Where's Goodwin?
I sent him upstairs, Inspector Kramer. Upstairs to Mrs. Malotte's room to check on something. Here he is.
Yeah? What have you been doing, Goodwin?
This, Inspector, is the pièce de résistance. This is what Mr. Wolfe has been waiting for. This little black box contains a typewriter. A portable, noiseless Remington.
Mrs. Malotte's typewriter.
What? I didn't even know she had a typewriter.
Larry knew she had one. And this is undoubtedly the very typewriter the threat notes were written on. All three of them.
You were right, boss.
Oh, I knew she had a typewriter, but I didn't write those notes.
Oh, shut up. Archie, how do you know the notes were written on this typewriter?
I've compared the type and the ribbon. They're both the same. These notes were written on this Remington.
It was Dorothy.
Larry, I don't believe a word you've been saying. Dorothy couldn't possibly be guilty of such a thing. If anyone is guilty, you yourself certainly have all the earmarks.
Everybody's against me, even my own father. But I'm innocent, I tell you.
Let me get it. I think I know who it is. Hello? Yeah, just a second. You better take it, boss.
Wolf. Oh, yes, go ahead. Let's have it. Yes? He's here, but he won't mind. Yes? I see. You just finished. Oh. Good. Right. Bye.
Was it the coroner?
The coroner. Reporting that poison was found in the sleeping capsules.
And the body. Did they find poison?
They did.
You're right again, boss.
I'm going up to Mrs. Millard's room for a while. I want you to come along with me. Find anything yet, Archie?
No, mostly bills and invitations to bridge parties and so on. You find something, boss?
Yes and no. This pocketbook detective story.
What about it?
I was just flipping through the pages and I find this corner turned down. Well.
What is it?
Look and read.
Why stay on in the face of death?
Interesting.
The very words used in one of the notes.
Give me the book. Of course, this doesn't prove a thing either. But it does confirm what I was... Oh-ho.
What now?
This cinches it. Get them all up here, Archie. Tell Kramer to bring them all to the bedroom.
Well, Mr. Wolfe, what now?
As you all know, Mrs. Millard was poisoned by someone who had an opportunity to put it in the sleeping capsule. Someone in this household.
Yeah, but which one? The kid?
I never bought any poison in my life.
Be quiet, will you?
No, Inspector, it wasn't there. Eh?
And I suppose you think I put the rest of that rat poison in your drink, Mr. Goodwin.
No, Dorothy, it wasn't you. But how did you know it was rat poison?
I didn't. I just guessed. I can think, too.
Well, then if it wasn't Dorothy or Larry, you must mean me.
No, Mr. Lott?
No, wait a minute. It had to be somebody.
Yes. This is going to be painful for you, Mr. Malotte.
Well, you mean that Mrs. Malotte did commit suicide?
It was more than suicide. It was suicide with an attempt to have both you and Dorothy convicted of murder.
She planted things?
She did.
I can't believe it.
Show him the pocketbook, Mystery.
Here's the proof.
Some of the threat notes were lifted bodily from this novel. But look on the back cover. Isn't that Mrs. Malotte's handwriting?
Yes, and this is the other note, the one to you, Mr. Wolfe. Composed in pencil before she typed it out on her machine.
Then, Wolf, the note you received was the same typing as the threat notes.
See for yourself, Inspector.
Then why the dickens didn't Archie compare them right away?
Just one of those things, Inspector. There are times when even a good detective is a bit on the, shall we say, dull side. Don't you find it often too, Inspector?
Nice of you to go all the way out there, boss. I was a bit stuck.
Quite all right, Archie.
Yeah, there's something that still bothers me.
So?
How can such a sweet, motherly type as Mrs. Malotte cook up such gruesome ideas?
She was a very sick woman, mentally as well as physically. She probably felt she was going to die. And her warped mind seized on the opportunity to make sure that this Dorothy didn't get her man after she was dead.
And speaking of Dorothy, she's a mighty pretty...
Yeah. Some beer, please, Archie. If you were so certain that Dorothy wasn't guilty, what was the idea of spending so much time questioning her?
Huh? Why, I...
Never mind the raised eyebrow department. Answer the question.
Well, there are certain rules a good detective always follows. Some are in the book, others aren't.
You mean there's nothing in the book which says a good detective shouldn't spend a few minutes with an attractive brunette, even though she is a murder suspect? The author of that book can be none other than the incomparable Archie Goodwin. Good night, Archie. Ah.
You have been listening to The New Adventures of Nero Wolfe, starring Sidney Greenstreet. Tonight's transcribed story by John Edison was based on the characters created by Rex Stout. This is an Edwin Fadiman production, produced and directed by J. Donald Wilson. In the cast were Harry Bartell as Archie Goodwin, and Gene Bates, Irene Winston, Ted Von Eltz, Jerry Hausner, Vic Rodman, and Bill Johnstone. Next week at this same time, Nero Wolfe and Archie will bring you the case of the shot in the dark. Don Stanley speaking. Three chimes mean good times on NBC. There's music in the air tomorrow evening. Music and fun brought to you by Dennis Day, Judy Canova, and Grand Ole Opry. Charming and boyish Dennis gets himself tangled in another bewildering situation, while Judy Canova gets together with her comedy pals for some mountain-style goings-on. And Saturday also means a killer cycle trip to Nashville for Grand Ole Opry. Friday's fun includes Sam Spade and, of course, the magnificent Montague on NBC.